But then the easy child starts to have meltdowns, starts to have behaviors that they've never seen before. And parents are always like, oh no, we broke the one that was working. Hello and welcome back to Raised Resilient, where I help you end the constant meltdowns without punishments, bribes, or yelling. I'm Dr. Hillary, and I am a child psychologist, parenting coach, and mom of three kids who feel their feelings in a really big way. So welcome. I'm so glad you're here. In today's episode, I'm not going to talk about your highly sensitive child. I'm not going to talk about your emotionally intense child. I'm not going to talk about your quote unquote difficult child. We're going to talk about another child today. And I would bet for most of you who have more than one child, you listen to this podcast because of your highly sensitive, emotionally intense child, your deeply feeling child. But you probably also have another child. And that child looks on the surface like a really easy kid, right? That child isn't having meltdowns. That child isn't having big behaviors. They do what you ask when you ask them to. And I think it's really important that they are part of our conversation about how having an emotionally intense child impacts your family dynamic. Because, and I think this is so important to understand, but I always tell parents, you got to check on your easy kid, because the easy kids, the convenient kids, the quiet, seemingly non-disruptive kids, they are not okay. They seem fine, but they are not fine. And I want to talk about why that is and how you can help your easy child. Because when all of your energy is focused on helping a child who's having daily meltdowns and big behaviors and big emotions, it is so easy to rely on your easy kid to be, well, the easy kid. And that makes so much sense. And that's not your fault. That's a family dynamic shift. And it's something that naturally happens. You didn't create this. But your easy kid needs something from you. And so I think it's really important that we do an episode about the kid who's not having the meltdowns and what their experience in a family where they've got a sibling who is constantly losing it, what their experience is and how to support them. So some of you listening to this podcast, probably you were the easy kid. Maybe you even had a sibling who was really struggling and you had big feelings, you had deep emotions. But you watched your sibling take up all the emotional air in the room all the time. And it might be especially triggering for you to see that dynamic play out with your own children now. So let's talk about it, because I think there's a lot of misconceptions about what is really going on for these kids who seem like they're just so able to go with the flow, right? So, okay, you've got your difficult kid, right? And I know they're not really difficult. They're not trying to be difficult. They're not giving you a hard time. They are truly having a hard time, but it can feel really difficult to parent them, right? So you've got your kid who is having meltdowns, big behaviors. And the reason for that is because your child is trying really hard to white knuckle through feelings that terrify them, feelings that get them into trouble, right? Because your child doesn't separate the behavior from the emotion. You might. Right? You might intellectually know it's fine for my kid to be mad, but it's not fine for them to hit me and take the whole family hostage with their behaviors because of it. But your child can't separate the behavior from the emotion. So when your child knows that I get mad, when I get mad, my mad feelings come out in all these messy ways, and my parent really does not like that, those behaviors lose me love, right? Now, I know you still love your kid even when they're doing egregious things, but to your child, your child knows that those behaviors are not desired, that those behaviors move them out of your good graces and lose them love, right? And yet they can't stop themselves. They can't help it. Once they get to that point where the emotions are flying out in all these messy, dysregulated ways, they're at the mercy of their impulses. And they know that. And so what starts to happen is they start to hold in their feelings. They start to suppress them, push them down until they can't anymore. And those feelings explode out in the form of a meltdown, right? We do the same thing as adults. We do the same thing as parents, right? We try to stay calm. Everyone tells you, you got to stay calm. Your kid needs you to be calm. So you're like, okay, I'm feeling really frustrated right now, but I'm going to stay calm. I'm going to say, hey, I see that you're really upset. But deep down, we are just this close to boiling over, right? We do the same thing. And parents tell me all the time, I try so hard to stay patient, but you know, she pushes my buttons until I scream. And we think that means that we're really in touch with our mad feelings. But actually, us getting pushed to the point of yelling is a symptom of us not being in touch with our feelings until our feelings get so big that we have to be in touch with them, right? That they come pouring out of us. Well, the same thing is happening for your emotionally intense child. Meanwhile, you've got your easy child over here. They are also stuffing those feelings down. And the truth is, they're just better able to white knuckle than your emotionally intense child. They are just better able at pushing it down for longer. Doesn't mean that they don't still have all those same emotions. So all kids throughout their day, just being a kid, encounter all kinds of stressors, right? So like any demand from us as parents, when our kids are asked to get up, get dressed, brush their teeth, eat food that maybe they don't love for breakfast, get their shoes on, get out the door, all these transitions, right? Those are inherently stressful things. Those are stressful for us too as adults. We just have learned to kind of manage that, right? Kids' brains are still developing. Kids are still learning about the ways of the world. And so all of this loads onto their stress system. I call it the emotional water pitcher. Little drops of water poured in all day long. So let's say your child is sitting in class and the kid next to them is endlessly tapping their pencil while your child is trying to learn math, right? That loads onto the emotional water pitcher. Your child is sitting at the table when the teacher corrects the kid next to them. That loads onto their emotional water pitcher, let alone getting corrected yourself. But like, even if the kid next to you gets corrected, that feels stressful. You're like, I don't want that to happen to me, right? Then they go to recess and there's all kinds of complex friend dynamics and they have to navigate that. The lunchroom is loud. They have to navigate that. They have a test. They're constantly learning new things. They're constantly asked to stand in line, be quiet, don't talk out of turn. So they are constantly inhibiting very natural impulses. So this is true for all kids in the course of their school day. Let's say that it's a weekend. Let's say they're not at school. They're constantly navigating dynamics with their siblings and they don't have conflict resolution skills, or they're managing boredom which is uncomfortable, trying to navigate extended periods of unstructured time. That is a stressor for kids. It's not that it's a bad thing. Kids need to learn to manage unstructured time. And same thing goes for, you know, you might be hearing this and thinking, what? So now I'm not supposed to ask my kid to get dressed and brush their teeth in the morning? Well, no, of course you are. But that doesn't mean it doesn't load onto their stress system. Two things can be true at the same time, right? So this is true for all kids. The problem is your emotionally intense child cannot hold it in. So it comes pouring out in the form of a meltdown. Your quote unquote easy child, they see this and they're like, I don't want to be part of that. I don't want that to happen to me. Let me hold even tighter to these feelings. And that can look a whole lot of different ways, right? That can look like them giving in every time their sibling is arguing with them and wants it a certain way, that your child just kind of capitulates because they're like, okay, it's just easier than dealing with a meltdown. Here, take my toy. Here, you get the lucky seat. Whatever, you know how there's always like one chair that kids fight over. When I was a kid, we fought over the lucky spoon. You know, there's always something that siblings are like vying for. But your easy kid is like, fine, you take it. I don't want to deal with this anymore, right? So you are watching this play out and you're like, I don't want to raise a people pleaser. Like, that's not good. But there's a part of you that even unconsciously is a little bit grateful because otherwise you would have two kids melting down. And that feels like impossible to manage because it's already impossible to manage one kid who's melting down, let alone two. So the entire family dynamic kind of unconsciously supports this one kid who's just holding all the emotions for the family and this other one who's quietly in the corner just doing what they're asked. I see this pretty much across the board with the families that I work with. When they've got more than one child, there is almost always one child who's the easy child and one child who's the more intense, more difficult child. That is just across the board. Let me tell you a story from back when I was working in a residential treatment center. This was actually for my internship up in Maryland. And I had a patient on my caseload. He was 16 and he had witnessed all kinds of domestic violence. He had a couple of younger siblings and he was what we would call the identified patient in his family, meaning that he was the one who got into trouble at school, and ultimately the school system said, we can't handle you, and therefore he had to go live in a residential treatment center. He was the one who looked like the problem, right? The other two siblings were in the school system functioning beautifully, seemingly, right? Mom was living at home, going to work, raising these other two kids. Everybody else looked okay. And my client, my patient, was in a residential treatment center because of big aggressive behaviors. So I did family therapy with this family, and the parents would come in, or the mom and the siblings would come in, and once a week we would do family therapy. And part of that therapy, for a while there, we were doing art therapy. And one of the things that I had them do, I had them create a mobile together. You know, those mobiles that you hang over your baby's crib and they're kind of like objects suspended in the air. I had them each create a representation of themselves. Now, I didn't tell them anything other than here's materials, create a representation of you. No other instructions. So they did. And then we hung the mobile up and everybody clipped their little piece to a piece of string. And I kid you not, my patient, his piece was so heavy, it like the entire mobile was lopsided. His piece was just like hanging down to the ground and everybody else's was up here just tiny and light. If that is not a literal representation of what this emotionally intense kid feels like in your family and how everybody in the family kind of feels about them, it's almost like we have put all of the emotions in the whole family into this kid, and this kid holds it all for everybody. Doesn't mean everybody else doesn't have emotions that need to get expressed, but the whole family dynamic has quietly kind of colluded that this kid is going to hold all the emotion for everybody and everybody else is going to look fine. And so as we did family therapy together and we did work on the entire family system, things started to shift, and I had them do that same project. And again, I didn't tell them anything. We noticed together, what do you notice about this mobile, right? But I didn't feed them my interpretation. We did the same project months later after a lot of work together, and they all created representations of themselves again. And wouldn't you know, that mobile was a lot more balanced because so was their family dynamic. They unconsciously created representations of what was actually happening in the family. And this is a shift. That shift from completely out of balance to much more in balance is a shift I see all the time with my Chaos to Connection families. I can't tell you how often I get a family, they come in for their, let's just say, 8-year-old son. They come in for their 8-year-old son. He's having daily meltdowns. He's hitting, kicking, screaming, saying, I hate you. I want a new family. They come in because he is the identified problem child, right? He is the kid who they would be sending to therapy, except we know, I have learned that therapy is not the right approach to helping these kids because it is a family dynamic problem when we're dealing with daily meltdowns. So if we treat a family dynamic problem with an individual child solution, we won't get anywhere. So they'll come in with this one child as the identified patient, the identified problem child, and they'll start to apply my framework. And suddenly they're seeing this kid stop having meltdowns, stop having aggressive behaviors. This kid is starting to do so much better. But then the easy child starts to have meltdowns, starts to have behaviors that they've never seen before. And parents are always like, oh no, we broke the one that was working, right? It's a scary feeling to see your quote unquote easy child seeming to fall apart. But I cannot stress this enough when I say it is exactly what we want to see. It is exactly the right shift. Not because, oh no, now we're having meltdowns with the kid that was totally fine before, but because we are shifting the family dynamic. Like from the foundation up, we are shifting it into a healthier dynamic. Because a healthy family dynamic is one in which we can all show up, warts and all, and get love, where we can all express and get help with our emotions when needed, and where we can all be together, right? It's not a dynamic where one person takes up all the emotional air in the room and holds everybody else hostage with their big emotions. That's not healthy. But that's where you are most likely if you are in that meltdown cycle with one of your kids right now. So what do? Well, we apply that same framework, those same ideas to this other child, right? To the easy child. And lo and behold, that child then also stops having meltdowns and big behaviors. And what we're left with is a family dynamic where everybody can get their emotional needs met. Because the goal is not for our kids to just not have feelings. That's not reality. As humans, we are going to experience the whole wide range of emotions. But if we are stuffing our emotions down because they get us into trouble, because they're not safe, because we don't know if they're ever going to end if we actually let them in, then we are not actually having a healthy relationship with our emotions. And I would venture to guess that most of you sitting here, you may not have a very healthy relationship with your own emotions right now, because most of us were taught through being parented to get up, brush it off, you're fine, don't cry, toughen up, right? And so we learned to push our emotions down too. And if you were that easy kid, I guarantee that's exactly how you survived. And it was really adaptive for you as a child. You learned to be exactly who your parents needed you to be, right? But now you're left with the cost of having suppressed your emotions and maybe still being stuck in that pattern of suppression. And so I would say that is the biggest shift that we help our families make in Chaos to Connection, is getting out of that pattern where everybody is white knuckling until they explode. And maybe one person has a much shorter fuse, right? Our emotionally intense child. So we see them having all the big meltdowns and everybody else looks fine, but that's not what's actually happening. So look, if you are stuck in this place where you've got your easy kid, you've got your intense kid, and you want to break out of that pattern and shift into a healthy family dynamic, that is exactly the work we do with families. And I'm incredibly proud of that work. We do this work in 8 weeks or less, y'all. It doesn't have to be some long, drawn out process. And I can't stress enough that this can change. Okay, these patterns are not set in stone. And you would be shocked at how quickly we can shift a family dynamic into a healthier place when we know what to do and when we actually support everyone in the way that they need. So if you're struggling, go to the link in the show notes and book a call, because we can help. And it doesn't have to be this hard, I promise. So I hope that helps you understand a little bit more of what is going on with your quote unquote easy child, because the easy kids are not okay. And if we don't help them learn to express their emotions, to share those emotions with us, to process those emotions instead of stuffing them down to be convenient, they will start to internalize those emotions. And that's not a good thing when you have a preteen or a teen internalizing all of their emotions, right? Because that looks like depression, anxiety, numbing out to screens, substances, food, shutting down, unhealthy relationships, pushing away the people that love you the most. None of that is what we want for our kids. So best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago, but the second best time is now. So even if you've got a kid where you're already seeing some of those patterns, it is never too late to shift this. I promise you. So I hope this is helpful. And again, none of this is your fault. This is just what happens. This is the natural way that these dynamics play out. The problem is when we're not aware of what's happening, then we can't do anything to shift it. So this episode exists to help create that awareness for you to understand that your easy kid needs you too, and that there is a way to create that healthy, even playing field where everybody is getting their emotional needs met. So with that, I will wrap up this episode. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for being here. And I'll catch you in the next episode.